From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter in Dallas, and joining me in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado is Mr. John Grace. Say hello, John.
Hello.
And out in the wild outback of Australia is Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
Hello. And chin-chin with the coffee I've got here.
Mm. So, John, the movie you picked this week was Blumhouse's The Hunt.
Yeah. Might be the first Blumhouse movie I've watched.
You've seen Benji, haven't you?
Which one?
Benji. Didn't they do the Benji remake?
Oh, yeah, they did. They totally did the Benji.
Yeah, it's not one you'd expect from them, but that is a Blumhouse.
Yeah, I thought that was okay, actually. I'm surprised.
Did Benji get blown up at all?
No. It was in New Orleans, though, so that's a very Blumhouse thing.
Here's the thing. Benji, the difference between Benji is it's just The Hunt, but instead of a pig, it's Benji.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they send Benji to Croatia. Stick in the middle of
a little less gore, I think, this time out. You know?
Yeah. Why would you remake Benji? Those films are actually quite good from the 80s and the late 70s.
I think Joe Camp's son directed it.
Yeah.
It's not
a straight remake. It's just kind of the same structure of the first film, but done in New Orleans with the different types of characters and stuff.
It's really just another Benji movie. Like, you know, you had Benji, which was actually shot out here in my neck of the woods. The original one was. It was shot just in, you know, just like 15 minutes north of me. Or 30 minutes north of me. But then for The Love of Benji, the second film, they're like in Greece, right? So you would have like a different location. Then there's Benji the Hunted, where he's like in the woods and getting chased by bobcats and stuff. Remember that one?
So the second Benji film's in Greece, in the country. Yeah. Greece. So Benji's out in the Santorini Islands getting some raises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's like running around like stealing sausages and stuff.
Well, it's okay.
You know, I gotta tell you though,
yeah,
I watched the original Benji a few months ago.
Yeah,
and my dog Cooper sat and watched the whole film. I'm not kidding. Like, normally he'll kind of look at the TV and then kind of just lie down and cuddle with you while you watch TV. He sat up and watched the whole movie.
Wow. You need to watch Chomp. You need to watch Chumps. And see if
Oh yeah, that's coming out on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I know. I'm just looking at it right now from Code Red.
Yeah, they just announced it. But I picked up the original Benji at Walmart on Blu-ray just a couple of years ago on a lark and said, "Oh, just watch it with Cato, my son, and everything." And I think I liked it more than he did because it was just that perfect 1975 or 74 indie vibe. You know, it's just it's a different feeling.
I like movies. I like that kind of regional filmmaking.
Yeah. That's why I liked it. It was like a Charles Pierce movie or something. You know?
Yeah, exactly. I was actually about to bring up Charles Pierce. It has that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And they've got the song that goes with it.
It's so, to me, that's the 70s more so than Star Wars or Grease, you know.
Yeah.
That's more typical of what a movie was like back then.
But yeah, the Benji films, and you know, it's the same director and dog trainer, you know, like he had the dog that played Benji. Higgins was on Little House on the Prairie. Oh no, it was what show was the dog on?
He was on Petticoat Junction.
Petticoat Junction, that's right.
Petticoat Junction, and then he was cast as Benji years later.
Yeah, well, he was Benji like when he was like he only lived another year. Like he was an old dog in that.
Yeah, it was weird.
And his son or daughter, I can't remember which one, played Benji in the follow-ups through Benji the Hunted.
Yo, we need to do Benji on a show, and we need to have Paul Talbot on because he wrote a whole detailed article about it.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, let's do it.
The legend of Paul Talbot continues.
Yeah.
Hey, Benji, go bite that other dog. They stole my sausage.
Hey, Benji, I'm taking you. I'm going to fix the car, and then I'm going to fix you.
They made it in 1977. Maybe they could have cast Benji in there, and it'd be like Bronson gives like an order, and then he goes, "Balls, Benji," and then Benji like bites a mugger in the balls or something like that. You can't carry a gun around.
Hey, Benji, hey. Close the door. I want to bang Jewel Island. Get out of here.
But anyway, yeah, I think a Benji show is in order because that is a series with a fascinating history.
I was just thinking.
They were huge. Those movies made so much money back then.
They did. Yeah, I remember them being massive over here, the Benji films. They played theatrically, that's for sure. Well, then started Kiss Me's the Phantom of the Park, so that doesn't say much about Australia.
But yeah, I mean, because it was...
Salem's Lot played theatrically there, didn't it?
Possibly. I know I saw Chumps at the drive-in. I loved it. That's why I'm buying the Blu-ray when it comes out later in the year.
What Chumps was a big theatrical thing.
What about A Return to Salem's Lot? Did that play theatrically?
I don't think it played it.
Oh, God,
that
no.
That cheap thing didn't play anywhere as straight to video.
Speaking of cheap things, what about The Hunt?
Okay, so The Hunt. So, John, this movie was supposed to come out in September of 2019.
Right.
And then that didn't happen because the premise came out and all the conservatives, because, you know, contrary to popular belief, conservatives have been canceling people for a long time. You know?
Yeah, like, yeah, it's like, true.
I've heard, you know, several prominent conservative intellectuals talk about this, where they go, you know, the conservative movement has been practicing cancel culture since like the 50s, you know?
Yes. Yes, they have.
Like if there's somebody in their circles they don't like, they will actively make sure they can't get a job, you know? But you know, there was, this was a, and the premise came out that this movie's about liberals hunting magapedes, like hunting deplorables.
Yeah.
And somehow they thought that this was a movie celebrating this or something.
This is how stupid their logic is with movies. They don't get, I knew right away what this movie was.
Yeah, me too. And I went, this is provocative exploitation. And, but they can't help but own themselves. They can't help but react, you right. know, And so the movie ended up not coming, for some reason, it ended up not coming out till
March. Was there a shooting or something at the time? Because I seem to recall there was like a shooting.
Well, there were a lot of shootings around this time, honestly. You know, it probably was, there was probably something used to make sure it couldn't come out. But let's see, it was moved, it was in the wake of the Dayton and El Paso shootings.
Okay.
So yes, there were several shootings. So they kind of used that as
both of which disappeared from the news after like 3 days when they found out the shooters' motives and they weren't MAGA freaks.
You know, had Joker come out by this point?
Yes.
I can't remember.
I think it had.
Joker was October 2018?
That sounds right. Sounds about correct.
Joker was 2019. It was October 2019. So it came out a month after this would have come out. Right. So, because Joker had a lot of pressure on it too, because they were saying this is a movie for shooters and people are going to shoot up.
And the studio cannily exploited both sides.
Oh yeah.
Issue it's for fun. To make sure that thing was a hit.
So The Hunt ended up coming out March 13th, 2020, and that was right when the lockdowns happened. So,
yep.
So they definitely picked a worse date to put it out there. But it is directed by Craig Zobel, who is a guy I'm not really familiar with.
He's like a TV guy.
Yeah, he's done a few films, but The Great World of Sound, that's a documentary, I think. Or no, it's a comedy. Never mind. And he's done some TV, but it's written by Damon Lindelof.
Yeah.
Who did the super woke HBO Watchmen show, You know, and he's one of these guys who wrote for J.J. Abrams. So, you know, honestly, this is probably the best thing I've seen from him, because most stuff I see from him I hate, like Cowboys and Aliens and Star Trek Into Darkness and Prometheus and stuff, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And the co-writer is also a guy who worked on HBO's Watchmen as well.
Oh, really? Okay.
So there's nothing to indicate this was, like, written by, you know, closet Ted Nugent fanatics.
No. Friends of yeah, here's the thing. Even though I'm saying conservatives own themselves, this is by no means a movie made by right-wing people. It is not a right-wing movie in the slightest. But it's also not like it doesn't go... The thing this movie does is it stays in the center. You know, it doesn't really take a side, but these are, it is a movie made by leftists. And I know Jason Blum isn't attending any Friends of Abe meetings either.
Yeah.
But, so the movie stars a few people. You got Hilary Swank as the villain. You've got Emma Roberts kind of shows up to, kind of fake you out. And, the real star is Betty Gilpin, but the,
who's she?
The thing, like, she's the main chick. She kind of looks
yeah, I know. Like, she's Crystal, but what's she done in the past?
Oh, she was
Glow,
in...
Glow, the Netflix show.
Which one?
Glow, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. She did the TV show, the fictional TV show based on the old wrestling promotion for Netflix.
She was also in A Dog's Journey, speaking of animal films. But yeah, I've never seen her in anything before. I've never seen anything with her. I never saw Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
Yeah, I never watched it either. This is the first time I've seen her in anything.
Yeah. And I gotta be honest, I liked her. You know?
Yeah.
She has a Holly Hunter vibe to her. Kind of.
Yeah, so with a better rack, I guess.
Oh, well, she's like Holly Hunter if more of a babe, you know?
Yeah, let's bring in that MMC sexism that our negative... How dare we talk about whether women look hot in a movie, where they're sold as being looking hot, you know?
Oh, they totally sell it in this. Like, when you first see her kill those two people, she takes her coat off and she's got the midriff and they have her. I was thinking, actually, when I saw that, I was going, they're blocking this to show you how big her boobs are. Because, you know, they have her standing in front of the doorway and she stands to the side.
Yeah.
And she's got the midriff and shirt hangs down.
Yeah, it's good.
And I was going, that was choreographed to go like, you know, to show you her chest, you know.
Yeah, she's a very lucky girl. Let's say that much. very blessed.
But so, John, what made you pick this movie?
I watched it a couple of weeks ago on HBO Max, and I just picked something to watch while I rode my Schwinn Airdyne. You know, I just watch a movie on my exercise bike, and I didn't expect to really care. Like, the reviews were very mixed, and I didn't see it back during the heyday because I really don't go see movies that much. And
yeah,
I tend to avoid movies that are controversial. I watch them when the dust settles. I'll put it that way. Because I feel like you're pressured to have a certain opinion, whether you vote a certain way or live a certain way. Like, and I'm talking about Passion of the Christ and some of these other big controversial films. I didn't see them until like a year later or 2 years later when the dust had settled, because I didn't want to feel like my opinion meant anything during all the controversy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sat down and watched this, and I expect, okay, this will be a 20-minute workout. I'm going to turn it off. No, I was on the fucking bike for about 70 minutes. You know, I was really actually held in. I just had to take a break. You know, just like, this is better than I expected it to be. Like, it starts off kind of brutal and funny, but not, it's not realistic in any way, I should add. It's this is all done very cartoonishly.
Well, like,
almost
like
a trauma movie, but.
Well, like when I was going, slower. I thought we kind of got the vibe of what was going on when Hilary Swank stabs the guy in the eyeball and rips his eyeball out.
Yeah, they get you going right away. I went, oh, okay, this is gonna be like Class of Nukem High or some nonsense, you know. And as it went on, I don't think the movie really grabbed me until, okay, you know, they go into the fake service station because they've gotten over the fence. and that entire group is wiped out by who was it? It's what's it? The good actor. Who's the one? Amy Madigan and the other fake guy. They wipe him out, and then Betty Gilpin comes in and kills both of them. And that's when the movie got me. I was like, okay, this is timing its action and suspense and revenge beats perfectly. Like, it's got you rooting for these characters. You think they're going to be a protagonist. And although I knew from the poster they weren't. But, you know, okay, and then they're all killed. And then suddenly this, you know, little waif comes in with the big rack and wipes them out. It's like, okay, this is definitely timed. It's got its swerves down right. It's got the twist going.
One of the things, actually hitting
those beats a lot better than I expected.
Yeah, and it had those. It fakes you out on the protagonist several times because you get Emma Roberts, and then she meets up with Giga Chad.
Yeah,
and then she gets her head blown off, and then Giga Chad steps on a mine and explodes, and then you have the alt-right Torch March guy. Running with Florida Man and White Trash MAGA chick. You know, like, they're all stereotypes. Yeah. Like, the Florida Man literally has a Florida tattoo on his face.
Yeah.
And the Torch March guy, you find out later because you see a picture of him at the Charlottesville rally.
Right.
But they go to that gas station, and then they all get killed by the people there, and you find out that they're actually lips. But I love that. The girl, the Betty Gilpin's character, she shows up, and the reason she knows they're full of it is that the price of cigarettes is wrong for Arkansas. They have like New York prices. They have New York cigarette prices. She's like,
cigarettes, that was $6. Brilliant twist, I thought, right there. And that's something only Americans are going to catch, that joke.
Yeah,
you know, because it's something we all know. Like, if we were, I remember the first time I went to New York, and sodas were 50 cents everywhere except New York, where they were like $1.50 or something. It was crazy. And we're talking a can of Coke. So I was like, what the hell? What's wrong with these people?
So I liked her a lot. And okay, I am really tired of female led action movies.
Yeah,
because it seems like every action movie, it's got to star a chick, you know?
Right.
And
they all want to be what's her name? Terminator 2 lady.
Linda Hamilton.
Linda Hamilton. Ever since that, it's all become about the action chicks.
Yeah, yeah. It's all James Cameron's fault.
Yeah.
But so, you know, every action movie, it's like you can get away with anything as long as there's a girl in there. But I actually bought her as a tough girl. Like, she has She has this face. She's a very unconventional kind of attractive.
Yeah.
She's really, like, I found her to be very attractive, but she's...
No, she's okay. I mean, she's got gremlin hands.
But she exudes a toughness. Like, she's got this, she has this look like she's always thinking about something in a really intense way. And, so I was able to buy her as the lead.
And also they have the character with the background. She had been in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And it's in combat.
Yeah, right.
Ooh, how timely for this recording. But
the guy who trained all the libs to fight was National Guard. You know?
Yeah.
Not minimize. National Guard people get blown up all the time, but it's like, you know, still.
Yeah, whatever.
But I love that she goes, were you in the shit? And he goes, well, I'm in it now. You weren't in the shit. And he goes, well, I'm in it now.
So that's a nice way to look at it. She executes him. I thought it was perfect.
So, Stuart.
Yes.
What were some of your reactions to this movie?
6 minutes in, I said, why am I watching this piece of shit? I nearly turned it off. This is fucking awful.
What didn't you like?
Everything. The whole lot. I didn't like the way it looked. I didn't like anybody in the film. I didn't buy any of it for a second. Not even any character for a second. Just it was 90 minutes of my time gone.
Well, let me seize on something you said there. You said you didn't buy any character for a second. Okay. I will say, aside from Gilpin's character, all the characters are political stereotypes. All of them.
Yes.
You know, Ethan Suplee's character is basically like a low-rent Alex Jones. I'm not going to say Mike Pinevick or something like that, because he seemed more in the Alex Jones territory, but like, you know, small-time guy.
Yeah.
Where, and you know, you had the sort of fat dude with the Navy hat or airborne or Air Force hat. And they all, like, all the characters talk in these talking points that are basically, what liberals think conservative people are like. And these people do exist. They're not wrong. There are people who obsess over dumb conspiracy theories. Hello, like, QAnon is just dumb conspiracy theories, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that follow that. Most of them are FBI agents, but, you know, there are still people who follow that.
Let's not get us on a list, Hunter.
Yeah.
Okay. We've had Paul Bishop on, so I think some cops listen to us occasionally. Okay. Could end up on a list. Just be careful.
Hey, we've had on this show cops and robbers, so
yes.
We've had some people on this show who have been arrested by the FBI, so
yeah.
Anyway, so
we don't discriminate, but we go on both sides of the law. We interview anybody,
but
just some are,
time, like,
some are smarter than others, that's all.
We're journalists, for God's sakes.
That's on. Right.
All the liberals in the movie are kind of the same way, though. They all snipe at each other about language,
yeah.
And they bring up random political issues seemingly out of nowhere, like, "Gee, I hope she was pro-choice or something."
Yeah, it's very
yeah.
Or is that soy in that drink? It's that sort of talk, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, you ate something with meat in it, you know? They find way who NPR that, oh, you got that from NPR. It's made up mostly of white people, you know.
Oh God, that was stupid. That line.
That's but, very true to the stereotypes and characters.
And, here's,
and it's unusual to see it in a Hollywood movie. I'll put it that
yeah.
way.
Here's the thing: is all the characters are political stereotypes on the left and the right. Okay.
Yeah.
And all those people do exist. You know?
So, stereotypes are in truth. They are based yeah, in truth.
Like, I believe me, in real life, I meet people who say all the kinds of things on both sides of the aisle that the characters say in this movie. So I could not go, it's unrealistic. But the characters are not like, they're not real characters. They all just, they're all political stereotypes. One thing, though, I thought was hilarious was the... Betty Gilpin's character, she starts to figure out if somebody's one of the people hunting her or not by the way they use language.
Yeah.
Like the guy who's from the embassy who picks him up, you're going, is this guy part playing the game? And you find out he is by the way he talks to them.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah, what did you say that might have offended him?
What did you say
like
that might have offended him? She's like, okay, this guy's playing the game. I need to kill him right
she
now.
She like drop kicks him out of a car. I was like,
and then runs over his skull.
Yeah.
That's the Toxic Avenger tribute, I think.
Definitely. Yeah.
But I did think that was very funny, was that they out themselves based on the way they talk about things and the way they address things. They address them in ways that are, you know, highly politicized, charged language.
That
well, then they have Hillary Swank's very masculine. Like, she's, like, lifting
weights. Oh, she's awful.
Girl boss character.
Yeah.
She's
awful.
Girl boss.
Awful. What a waste.
The perfect villain for this movie, though.
Nah.
Oh,
man, that fight at the end was just ridiculous. That was a 15-minute... awful.
It reminded me of the opening fight in Kill Bill Volume 1.
Yeah.
That's what it brought to mind.
Only not even half as good.
No,
I didn't have the choreographers like Sonny Chiba and Yuen Wu Ping working on the fight. So no. This is basically what you get when you get a Bulgaria Hollywood crew doing that. I thought it was well edited. I didn't mind that it was long. I like long fights, but the comedy kind of came back into that fight scene where they're like, oh, not the glass. You know, it's got like two women fighting. This is what they're going to be concerned about.
Oh, she chucks that bottle. I thought that was kind of interesting. They brought up at the beginning that bottle of champagne that was taken off that German vessel.
1907.
And later, she's like, yeah. Ah! Coming for it! But also, you mentioned like Bulgaria. The movie takes place in like Croatia or something. That's actually, that is a big vector point for human trafficking.
Yes, it is. That's why Hostel, I think, was set there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Hostel came to mind when I was watching this. I thought this is like a political version of Hostel. You know, somewhere.
Yeah, it's like a political action version of it, or something like
and
that.
And I fucking hate Hostel. I think it's a pile of shit.
Yeah, I don't care for the Hostel movies.
I don't like Hostel either. I like this movie quite a bit more than Hostel. But the thing this movie does is it doesn't take a side. The main character is the only character who does not. She doesn't really tilt her hand politically at all in the film. Did you guys notice that?
No.
I felt that she voted for Trump because, as Movie Dweller pointed out, he said even if she didn't vote, not voting was pretty much a vote for Trump.
Oh, big time.
But, and plus, she was from Mississippi. Mississippi's going to always go for the Republican no matter what.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And she's a blue-collar working type.
Yeah, and she was a vet. So
So they give you the indication that she fits in with the people that are kidnapped, but there's a reveal later that she's not the person Hillary Swank thought she was when she selected her. Like, it was
that,
a mistake.
That was bullshit. That name is so obscure that you couldn't have two in the same area that they'll get mixed up. I'm sorry. If her name was Jane Smith, yeah, you can understand that. But Sylvia Creasy.
Well, the thing is, the Twitter, they showed her Twitter page. It was Justice for Y'all at Twitter or something. I mean, I think she was the one. I think she was just screwing with her. It's like, but I think she was the one they were looking for.
You think so? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of leaves it open ended for that. Like,
it leaves a few things open ended, like that. And there's a guy that's one of the hunted people. And at a certain point in the game, she decides he's probably one of the bad guys, and she shoots him in the head.
Yeah.
But it's just a feeling she has. It's not a, you know, and we never find out if he was or not.
She's well, he like, did raise the gun at her. Yeah. So you could definitely say, yeah, probably. And also he was the most over the top of the conservative stereotypes. Yeah, those Jew boys on Nixon.
Oh yeah, yeah. He was the only one who was like openly anti-Semitic. You know?
Right. And it just like he came off like acting like what they think a Fox watcher comes off like, or whatever.
Oh, he's either one saying that about the crisis immigrants or whatever they were on the train. That guy.
I think that was the podcaster guy. That was
right.
Like Cernovich type or whatever.
No, that just all. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think Don, the guy with the white beard and he had the baseball cap.
Oh, that's right, Don. Yeah, yeah.
The one, you know, he held the pig for when they did that, when the guy came out to urinate, and he's like, "Hey, is this your pig or whatever?" And then she slits the guy's throat.
Yeah, and he doesn't kill any of them, you know.
Right. She's like, "You haven't done anything."
He kind of disappears when she goes in and attacks.
Yeah. She's like this one woman army, and this guy does nothing. So I think it kind of revealed he was a plant, you know, because the way he was basically delivered to her when she was being interrogated, it was like, okay, that guy's a plant.
And you know, at the beginning they have that that crate that they all go to pull the weapons out.
Oh yeah,
and it turns out to just be, that was just a giant honeypot to get them all together and mow a bunch of them down.
Right.
And he kind of led everybody to it, and he's the only one who got away. Besides her,
and they were sniping accurately.
Yeah, and she didn't get killed because she didn't go to the honeypot. You see her at the beginning, and she just walks off.
Yeah, she didn't go to the open field.
And so, you know, she was smart enough to know. Because I remember watching the scene going. this just feels like a trap. Why are you guys going? Yeah. That would not be. I don't care how many weapons are in there. I'm not going out there.
Right, right. You're out in the open.
It's the best one of those I've ever seen in my life is ever seen in the film when they, you know, honeypot them all in the one thing is in Sea of Love at the start. If you can remember that, the Al Pacino film.
Well, I've never seen Sea of Love.
I mean, when
I've never seen it. I brought it up as the type of movie that used to come out regularly. Was the adult thriller.
It's a good movie, but at the start they send all these guys. I think they're either, it's a long time since I've seen, they're either got outstanding warrants or whatever, and they get sent all these baseball tickets and they have to go to this hole and they basically get nabbed by the cops in one big foul swoop. But that,
I always said you could trap all the pedophiles in town if you went to the Disney movies at the 10 p.m. screenings. You just round them up.
Yeah, pretty much.
Get all your sex offenders right there.
Yep. All the ones subscribed to Disney Plus. Oh, yeah, that's a high
note. I've always said that.
Yeah. The mouse is actually... Yeah, okay, don't worry. Keep going.
Who the hell takes their kid to a midnight screening of a Disney movie, you know?
Yeah,
it's bad juju. So John, what were some of your like political takeaways with this movie? Why do you think this movie exists?
Well, I either felt like it was corporate sabotage, which is highly unlikely, because nothing in the talent behind the camera indicates this. That would have been my first guess. Otherwise, I think when screenwriters try to be self-deprecating against their own politic, they tend to bash themselves better than, like, say, a conservative could bash them if a conservative
oh, yeah.
in this movie, because it's like they really turn the guns on themselves and it backfires tremendously better than they probably expected. And I had a theory when I saw this. I didn't think it was pulled because of the shootings. I didn't think it was pulled because of the conservative outrage, because who the hell cares? When did Hollywood ever care about that? I actually think an executive screened this movie and heard his thoughts and words in the mouths of the villains. I think he heard his own thought. He goes, "These screenwriters are making fun of me. Screw it. We're going to pull this and put it in a dead time for movies, you know, March or February."
Good.
Oh, that's an interesting theory.
That's what it felt like. It's like, I think he felt offended. They were making fun of his type of people. Because they talk like movie executives probably talk.
Don't do
that language. Don't say that those people. Poison, sugar. Sugar is poison. You know, that sort of shit. I can imagine these idiots who run these studios talking like that. And I think the screenwriters based it on executive meetings.
I was
going to
say, knowing screenwriters, they hate those people. You know?
Yes. So that's my wild theory. I have no evidence for it, but that is the vibe I got watching it. Because we all know these screenwriters. They always, you watch their films, there's always scenes set in coffee shops. Why? They write a lot of their scripts at Starbucks. So you always have a coffee shop scene. You know, so it's like, who's to say that all this stupid double talk coming out of these executives and these liberals wasn't something they actually experienced, and they just, you know, and somebody, one of the executives recognized it, went, "You sons of bitches, we're going to dump this thing in March, and we're going to blame it on conservatives or whatever, or real life shootings." There's always real life crime. There's always real life shootings. You don't pull a movie just because of that.
Yeah. In fact, you know, the Joker had all this same stuff swirling around it, and they just totally exploited it.
They rode it, man. They pulled a William Castle and rode that shit.
Yeah, they were like, yeah, you know, let's do it. This ain't Dark Knight Rises. Nothing's going to happen.
Yeah. they took full advantage and played it up. And this is another R-rated film. Why would you pull an R-rated film because of alleged real life controversy or some people bitching about it on Twitter? I think somebody got pissed off. Somebody screened. Yeah. Some Universal exec screened it and said, "You motherfuckers."
Good.
He quoted a meeting I had with you guys 2 years ago. "You sons of bitches."
Well, going by the box office here, it's lost money. So that's one good thing out of it. Budgeted $14 million. It's gross only $11.5 million.
We've got 16 here.
16.
Yeah, the last movie I saw in a cinema was King Kong. They revived the 33 Kong. I went to see it. This was playing on the other screen. And I said, well, I'm not going to see that. Or I'll go see it later this week. Because I think Jesse had told me it was pretty good. And our listener, Jesse. And but I was like, maybe I'll go see it later this week. So I went in to see Kong. And, of course, the next day they shut down the theaters.
Yeah, well, I'd rather see King Kong. I'm not even a big King Kong fan either than watch this.
No, really. Yeah, I'd probably rather see King Kong than just about any movie.
Yeah, I'm not much of a King Kong fan. I mean, the first one's okay.
I'm an American, awesome. Man. 33 Kong. That's the greatest film I'll ever made. if it's not that, it's Vertigo. You know.
Yeah.
When you watch the original King Kong, it goes by like that. It's such a brisk adventure film. It's never boring.
I will say that's a good point you raised, because when I watched this, as much as I hated this film, it flew by really quick.
Oh, big time. I was sitting there watching it, and it was 90 minutes. Our buddy Walter called it brisk genre filmmaking.
That's what it is.
Or swift genre filmmaking. Yeah. It was one of those. Absolutely. To me, it felt like a classic exploitation film where you've got like hot button political stuff it's throwing in there, lots of violent action, and 90 minutes quick. There's always something going on. So I enjoyed it in that regard.
Yeah, it's got that 70s New World vibe, but with better filmmaking and better
production.
Yeah, better, slicker production and better pace, because I was actually sitting through a lot of those New World movies. And I'm not talking about the good ones like Death Race 2000. I'm talking about like the Great Texas Dynamite Chase and stuff.
They're boring as hell.
They're shot out in the valley. And
well, and like a lot of those old exploitation films, you know, they would get kind of baggy with lots of dialogue you don't care about. And,
yeah,
you know, it was like they were trying to stretch their budget, get it to a feature length time period. And you just get the little bits of action here and there. But this is action all the way through. Like it's never slow. It's always moving. Mm-hmm. There's always something interesting going on. And, you know, it is quite violent and enjoyable in that regard.
Yeah.
But Stu didn't like it.
No.
Yeah.
So.
Nope. No.
And I also think with Stu being Australian has a lot to do with it, because it's very dialed into American political issues.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah. It's like, I don't think it was going to play outside of America very well. I think they really got hurt when it was because of the pandemic, because this was not going to make money outside of America. It's not going to make money in China. It's not even going to get released there.
It's in fact,
Europe,
John,
you know, forget it.
John, you know, I can say something I'm always complaining about is that they don't make American film companies do not make movies for Americans anymore. Not the case here. This is a movie.
No, this is only made for Americans.
Okay, here we go. This has been released on Blu-ray in Australia. I had no idea. Didn't know. Not that I give a shit, but I've never seen it around.
I do appreciate a movie that is 100% like dialed into. It is something for Americans to enjoy.
Yeah.
Whether or not I kind of wonder how this plays for a liberal audience, even though it's made by liberals. I wonder if it how it plays with them. I didn't read a lot of the critics from, you know, American critics are entirely left wing, so I kind of wonder.
Yeah, I don't listen to those eggheads, those geeks. You know, Armand White's about all I pay attention to. Sometimes Debbie Schlussel for laughs.
This seems like something. Oh, Debbie Schlussel is a total cartoon character.
She's hilarious. She should have been
I give this movie 10 Bin Ladens.
10 Bin Ladens and 5 Karl Marxes. And, you know.
This movie gets 5 Ronald Reagans. Go see it. reactions. Let's see. Kyle Smith. What did Kyle Smith argue the film would like. Kyle Smith was saying it was being misinterpreted. Yeah, of course it was.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it very much was.
We said as much.
Well, I think critics are baffled by it because they usually are not confronted with a film like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you know something like this is going to totally throw them off. Just like Zack Snyder's work tends to throw them off. There's other directors that just kind of like they have a style that the critics don't know what to think. Like they're completely baffled.
Well, Snyder is so sincere as a filmmaker that, you know, it's we're so used to the ironic distance these superhero movies give us because they're comedies as well as action as well as whatever, you know. Whereas Snyder is a little more trying to make something epic, you know.
Well, he gets epic and he gets theological, and they don't like that.
They don't like acknowledging religion.
Yeah, they're not comfortable with Superman going into a church and getting advice from a priest.
Yeah, and sitting in front of a stained glass window of Jesus, you know.
Yeah.
They don't like that. Just something about it raises, you know. And his movies have a big emphasis on beauty. Like his actors are all, you know, well built. They're beautiful.
Yeah, they really hate that.
They do not like beauty at all. And Zack Snyder loves to make every image just look good. He likes every, you know, they'd rather just stuff be silly, goofy, you know. And his movies do have some humor in them. Like Justice League has a lot of humor in it, but but you compare it to the Joss Whedon version and it's just off the charts.
Right.
Still have not seen the Snyder cut. I still haven't seen the Whedon cut either.
Two completely different movies.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Different. I know they are, but
100% different.
So what do I go for? The Snyder cut, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Big time.
Set aside about 5 hours.
But yeah, I know. It's four hours.
It's easy to divide it up though, because it's kind of in parts.
Yeah, they did make it accessible that way, where you could watch 2 hours every night or 90 minutes.
You could watch it as a mini series if you wanted to.
Yeah, that's the best way to view it, I think.
But I watched it all in one go. I was,
of course you did, Hunter.
me and Walter, you know.
Yeah, you and Walter and Zolly were on Zoom, and you were watching it and doing reacts.
Just talking about how great Snyder is.
Yeah, you were doing like one of those Kumia live casts where he's doing commentary on Back to the Future.
I was doing my commentary as Gilbert Gottfried doing Groucho Marx on in the 70s. Well,
girl, Wonder Woman.
I remember when Linda Carter played her back on television.
Yeah, Zolly was talking about the toy. What was the phrase? Toydetic? Toydetic?
Toyetic.
Yeah, toyetic, yeah.
Joel Schumacher let us in on that little phrase.
Oh, wasn't it toyrific? Right. That was toyrific, wasn't it?
There's several. I've heard toyetic, toyrific. I think Schumacher used several different iterations of it. But yeah, it was, is this going to sell toys, you know? And the Whedon version is the toyetic version.
Yeah.
Sells toys, that means more little boys. Perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh. Schumacher's phrase was based on who he was molesting that week. So,
Wait, it's Corey Haim, so it's toyetic. Okay.
Yeah. If anybody's offended, I remember in an interview this guy said some of these young kids are very seductive, so you know he was covering.
Yeah, so don't come at us for this shit. He said it.
Yeah. And he's dead. Yeah. We can libel him. We can say whatever we want. So.
And also, I just remember when I saw Lost Boys for the first time getting creeped out when Corey Haim's room was covered in posters of Rob Lowe.
I always found that movie very pedo, and it has a following that I can't figure out.
I've never seen Lost Boys, not owned on Blu-ray, because I got it for a cheapie.
Oh, we gotta do it on the show.
Well, it doesn't mean we gotta do it because we talk about it.
You can't talk about
fucking Rob Benji. Oh, we should do Benji. It, so. The Lost Boys. Oh, let's do Lost Boys. What about Can't Stop the Music? Silence. So you know the Village People film that came out in 1980? It's a lot of fun. We should do it one day. Silence. Yeah, the Village People film. It's really, you really will enjoy it. Silence.
Okay. Yeah. We'll do Can't Stop the Music.
We got to have Dan Seitler on for that one.
Let's do that. Let's do Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band with Peter Frampton and the Bee Gees also.
Mm. Yeah.
Musical month. Rock music month.
Let's do rock music month where we just do that's what we did for rock month one time, wasn't it? We just did movies.
I think
right?
so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna rock.
Dude, we didn't even do anything this year.
Nah.
Oh, nah. It totally passed us by.
Well, we put it to death. We put a fork in it.
Yeah. Killed. Yeah. We killed it.
Dead.
And nobody's...
Yeah, we might do something like the heavy metal cartoon movie or whatever. Maybe we'll do that sometime.
But it might be fun to do like a few movies that are structured around bands like Sgt. Pepper or Can't Stop the Music. I think that might be fun.
Yeah.
We can do the film structured around Wasp. We'll do that Dungeon Master film.
Oh, yeah. God.
I sold my copy. Come on.
Oh, really?
We can also...
Yeah.
We can also do Jersey Boys. Love that movie.
Yeah, I do too.
That's a
good
movie.
Yeah.
I watched it twice last week. Love it.
Oh, wow.
Major fan. There.
Yeah. And I, listened to the soundtrack. It's great. Loved it.
That is
fantastic.
It's one of Clint's better ones over the years. And
I think as far as Clint directing, it's phenomenal. Like one of some of his best work. And okay, Clint, this is a very Clint move, but it's something that everybody should be doing. Every time Hollywood adapts a musical, they always go, okay, let's get some stars in there. Clint just went, oh, well, why don't we just get the Broadway cast?
Yeah.
Yep.
Easy, simple. And like the guys in the movie, they all sing like singers. And you're able to see them as the characters. So I'm not getting like, Russell Crowe and Hugh Jackman or whatever.
Right.
But that, it's one of those things that Clint would do because he's old school and he's practical. But if it was anyone else, they'd be like, let's get Robert Pattinson and let's get Taylor Lautner in there. And, they'd get some young...
Justin Timberlake is Frankie Valli.
Yeah, it's like Justin Timberlake will be Bob Gaudio,
Yeah.
That'd be more for the fact. Clint, why are you going to cast the Broadway cast?
Because they know the lines, one take, that's it.
Yeah. One of the actors was being interviewed and he goes, my agents were freaking out. And I said, you know, I've done this for 3 years every night, right? And they're like, oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
My audition. He's like, I know this by heart. I don't, stop
Yeah, if
worrying.
We were like Scorsese, Mark Wahlberg, and DiCaprio would have played them, and,
Yeah.
Fred Durst would have cameoed as Joe Pesci,
Okay, now I want to see that. Yeah, that was something I had no idea. When Joe Pesci shows up as a character, like a guy playing Joe Pesci, I went, wait, what?
Yeah.
But I always forget Joe Pesci had a music career,
Oh, yeah. Boris Karloff did some sort of rock novelty song, and I think Joe Pesci played guitar.
Interesting.
Was that the Monster Mash
song? No, it was like a Peppermint Twist or something like or The Twist or something. I don't know. But
Boris
it was called
Karloff!
And it was... Yeah.
Do the Peppermint Twist.
Something like that. It was. I'd have to dig it up, but I got to look into it. But I noticed it on Facebook today. People were talking about it.
Jeez.
If you look up the Four Seasons getting inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or one of these Hall of Fames, you see Joe Pesci up there introducing them, and he goes, "And none of this would have happened if not for me."
Yeah, of course.
Very true.
Yeah, because he introduced Bob. Because Bob Gaudio wrote all the songs and stuff. So yeah, Pesci hooked them up. Anyway, good tangent.
Yeah, Joe Pesci, I wish he'd worked more, but had his career was a lot of bright spots. He didn't pick a lot of dogs.
And I even heard, I think AJ Benza was saying that when Pesci didn't want to work and a movie really wanted him. Like, there was some movie where he was able to get a million a day over the schedule. Yeah, and it was because he was just like, I don't want to work. And he's one of those guys who, if he does work, it's, you know, you got to let me play golf till this time before I come in. You know, like he's just,
that must be the Irishman.
Yeah. Maybe it was,
who would have that money? Because he's retired.
He's retired.
It's all that.
Maybe it was Love Ranch. Remember Love Ranch?
No. Gone Fishing with Danny Glover.
Gone Fishing. Yeah.
Gone. You know, it's the one film I've always enjoyed of his that just no one remembers is The Super with Ruben Blades.
Oh, yeah. Never saw
it. I really enjoyed that. But it's just gone, it's just forgotten.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff's been memory hold.
Yeah.
You know what's
I know what you're talking about. I haven't even thought about it since it opened, and now you mention it. It's like, I forgot that movie existed.
Yeah.
You know it's a movie with Joe Pesci that sucked was With Honors. You remember that stupid movie?
Oh, no. Brendan Fraser.
It's the one where he's like, oh, he's the homeless guy, but he's a genius.
Yeah.
God.
Oh, it's one of those movies.
Oh, no. Those movies are terrible.
Like Good Will Hunting is also bad, you know, just
yeah, it looked terrible from the trailers. So
okay, by the way, you guys, have you seen Good Will? Have either of you seen that movie lately?
I have not.
Not for okay. 5 years or at least.
I saw it like back, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. I don't remember all that much.
Right.
But I was listening to Low Res recently, and Low Res was saying that that he's like Matt Damon's character, he's like a pedophile, and and he goes and he's in therapy with Robin Williams, and Robin Williams is like, hey, it's okay, it's because you were molested and it's okay. And I was going, I do not remember that at all. I remember
that bit. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I totally forgot that. That he's like, he has.
So Lorez is not pulling your chain. He's not pulling your chain with that.
No,
it's when.
I've never seen it. I couldn't.
Matt Damon breaks down. It's when Matt Damon breaks down crying, and Robert Williams saying, it's okay. It's okay. This is coming from a guy who hanged himself, but, you know, he's oh, it's okay. It's okay.
It's okay, you're touching the list.
The way Low Res talked about it, though, it was, you know, it is New York way of recounting it. It was just, I was going, wait, what? I don't remember that at all.
There you go. Hans, you've canceled pedophiles. What did you think?
There's a film that actually was around the same time that Matt Damon made that was much better than Good Will Hunting, and that was one called Rounders.
And oh, yeah, Rounders. I remember that movie.
I really enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, there's a scene in that movie that always stuck with me, and that's when his girlfriend, like, leaves him because he's been gambling with Ed Norton so much, and he's just like, all right, screw it, let's go play cards. You know, he's moved all her stuff out, and he's just like, let's go play cards.
That John Malkovich character as the Russian was ridiculous. So I was like, yeah, if you got any money, it's not, yeah. I mean, the film's good, but
it's good. It wasn't perfect, but it was a solid flick for that time. You know.
Yeah, it was a fun watch. More fun than this one.
I have to watch The Super. I've never even heard of this movie.
You never heard of it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, never even heard of The Super.
You're probably going to have to do a bit of a TORRENT on that one because it's not readily available.
Not available.
It was unless from that era when Joe Pesci was in a comedy like every year. They were really big on putting him in movies.
Like JFK?
Yeah, exactly. That's his funniest performance. Totally underrated.
Yeah, so he did... The Super was right after Home Alone. My goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just before JFK, or the same year as JFK it might have been, I think.
Yes, it was the same year as JFK.
Or thereabouts, yeah.
That was like his gold run right there for stardom. Because he was old, you know, he was like in his 50s or something by the time he hit it big. So.
And My Cousin Vinny as well, which I still enjoy.
Yeah, that's a decent movie.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the movies for Joe Pesci. Like that, Goodfellas, and Home Alone are like the trifecta.
Yeah, my cousin Vinny should have launched like a Thin Man type of film series with him and Marisa Tomei, and it didn't.
Yeah.
And I know there's a series of novels that have been written about those characters. Like I think the writer got permission to use them in these ebooks or whatever, and apparently they're pretty well written. Like they're actually fun, but I always thought that's what they intended with the movie, was to launch a series where he would, you know, do all these kind of cases like Nick and Nora, you know, would have worked, but they weren't thinking that way back then.
You know what's a movie with Joe Pesci that nobody remembers that I remember liking when I was a kid? I haven't seen it since
then. Death Collect.
Yes, The Death Collect. No, Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag.
Oh, boy. That is one that's forgotten.
Yeah.
Wow, are we 90s flashbacking right now? I remember the poster. I never saw it, but I remember the poster. We're going to talk about 2 Days in the Valley next and Danny Aiello and Charlie's Theron. let's take it back to the 90s.
Yeah, it's like Joe Pesci's. I remember thinking it was pretty dark because he's running around with literally eight heads in a duffel bag. Like,
so it's a literal heads. Title. Jesus.
Yeah.
What a dark, demented movie is this?
Yes. But yeah, I remember after Lethal Weapon 4, you didn't see him in anything for a while until I remember when The Good Shepherd came out, that movie about the founding of the CIA. Back when you were allowed to criticize such organizations. I remember Joe Pesci being in that and going, oh my gosh, Joe Pesci's in it. He hasn't been in anything in forever.
Yeah.
You know, it was only like 7 years or something. Six, 7 years.
Well, if you watch interviews with him, he's very quiet. Like he's very quiet, kind of fey and kind of high voice. Like he's nothing like his characters.
Not like Tommy in Goodfellas.
No, not at all. It's like he's just kind of, hey, yeah, they brought me the script. You know, like, all he does is just spend time with a country club, and that's it.
He loves golfing is his thing. He loves golf.
I never got the appeal of golf. What, you hit a ball, go find it, hit a ball, go find it. I don't understand it.
I've played a few times, and it's relaxing. And it's fun. You really focus. I enjoy it.
Okay, if you say so.
Past a certain age, I think it's just to get away from your wife.
Most likely, yeah.
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 You know, hang out with the fellows at the country club, pinch the waitress's ass, do all those things that, you know, you're not supposed to do.
Yep.
But
it's not, even mini golf, I can't be asked.
Mini golf! I love that. I haven't done that.
I only like mini golf when there's dinosaurs. If there's dinosaurs and a King Kong, then that's cool.
I like it when there's a clown that tries to block the ball with its teeth.
Oh, sons of bitches!
Who's laughing now, clown?
That's when you take the end of the golf club and just smash the teeth out of the fucking clown's mouth.
Like in Happy Gilmore when he's golfing with Carl Weathers and he has to work on his putt game.
Yeah.
Well, the problem I had with that movie, Bone Tomahawk, the first Zoller movie, was
we do not criticize Zoller films on this podcast.
I'm criticizing that one. like when they're in the cannibal cave, it looks like something you'd see at a putt course. It does. It's too clean. It looks nice. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they filmed it at like a putt course to save money.
Excuse me, but we love your cannibal themed putt course.
Yes. It's like, are we going to film a gory cannibal western in this?
Do you mind?
Yeah, we just need 3 hours.
Do you mind if we film at your cannibal putt course a man getting split down from his legs to his skull? You mind?
Yes. That's what it looked like. It's just too clean. It's just like, you know, it should look gritty and grimy, like an Italian cannibal movie, and it looks like, you know, I go down to putt golf or something, you know, super golf, goofy golf, and you find a cave like that.
Goofy golf.
Yeah, I didn't care much for that one. I like the other two Zoller movies, but I think that's all he's ever going to make, to be honest with you. But,
you don't think he's going to make another film?
I don't get the vibe. It seems like he would have already been announced that he's working on something. It's been 3 years since Dragged Across Concrete.
Yeah. And
it's been like 5 years since Cell Block whatever, you know?
Oh, I didn't like that one. Cell Block.
I love that movie.
That was stupid.
Yes, we did devote a show to that where Stu made it very clear he didn't like it.
That's right. I forgot. I just love it so much. I forgot that anybody could not like it. You know?
I know you're enthusiastic, but it's like there hasn't been anything announced.
And Dallas is producing stuff for the Daily Wire, and you know, I was thinking maybe Zoller would do something for them, but I don't know. Maybe Craig doesn't like Little Ben, you know.
Yeah, he's smart enough to know that it's probably a bad thing to tie in with, because I think
it's a ghetto, you know.
Yeah, it is. Like, okay, the only way you're gonna watch this movie, this Run, Hide, Seek, whatever the hell it's called. It's like you got to join the Daily Wire. You got to get a subscription. That's the only way to watch it. What, you can watch it on your computer or a laptop? I mean, get the hell out of here.
Precisely.
Yeah. It's like, you can go blow. And then, like, they're going to adapt that Eric Red script for Gina Carano. It's like, okay, great. You're totally blowing it. You know, Amanda Milius, I think, put out her pro-Trump documentary by herself. She pressed up the DVDs on her own and everything, and she's done great with it.
Jeez.
She sold copies to Japan. She had it on Amazon Prime, and Dallas and Ben are just going to make this, you got to get a subscription to the Daily Wire, watch it on your laptop. What the hell are you going to do that for?
Well, listen,
almost watch a movie that way.
Listen, John, I have access to Republican donor money, which we can use to make these films.
Was he one of the ones that got this movie out of theaters, The Hunt? Like, he stopped it from
early? Probably. You know,
he was.
Yes. Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if he was like, well, okay, time out, hunting, hardware. I mean, I don't like Trump either, but come on.
You know. Alex P. Keaton, bastard. It's like, Jesus. These people are Philistines. They shouldn't be involved with movies. I'm sorry.
But the thing about Zoller, though, is he has the connection to Vince Vaughn and Mel Gibson. Seriously. No. Because Mel, you know, Mel still has some power. You know, he can still make stuff. And he can still produce stuff if he wants to. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he was script doctoring something for Mel or working on stuff with him that they haven't announced.
And Zoller also does music, he does books, you know. So
yeah, he's reviewing stuff on Goodreads. He reviews like fantasy novels and the latest Tolkien release of his unpublished stuff.
So yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going away, but you know, I don't think you're going to be seeing him producing stuff for Bonfire Legend for the Daily. What, you know?
Well, I think he's like Eric had pointed out. He might be a Renaissance man, and maybe has no interest in going back to film. Like, he just wants to do music, or maybe he's writing novels or whatever, and just doesn't. And he's obviously, I think he comes from money, so he doesn't care.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, at this point, I assume anybody who has a big career in entertainment is just a blue blood elite, you know, like they're rich.
Well, okay, Betty Gilpin, star of this movie. She is from a Connecticut blue blood family, and her relatives, she is like the granddaughter of like a Democrat senator and everything. Like, she's from money.
Yeah, when you look into these people, they always, whether it's in music or film or anything, they always have some connection to the elite class. It's pretty rare that you're Gene Kelly in Singing in the Rain going up on doors and going, gotta dance, shut up, and getting discovered. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I've always pointed out, find out how many actors who star in all these action films and whatever, how many have actually been in the service? None. How many were high school athletes, college athletes? None. It's like, you know, they're all theater kids.
And that's
rich kids, you know.
And I think that's one reason, you know, movies aren't as interesting today, because you don't have your people who, you know, they've been in the service, they've done, you know, like Jimmy Stewart goes to World War II and comes
Bogart
back,
you know.
Bogart and John Wayne, and you know, well, John Wayne was an actor, but you know,
he didn't go into the service. Steve McQueen who'd been in the Navy. Kirk Douglas, who went to sea and got sick and came back. So Lee Marvin, same thing.
Didn't get too sick when he had Natalie Wood, did he? Was okay then.
Oh, that baloney story.
I don't believe it.
Yeah, we got the whole skinny on that. Alana Wood was always a bitchy, jealous person. And there's all these photos of Natalie and Kirk Douglas laughing at award ceremonies and stuff.
After, like in the 70s. Oh, my gosh. I just looked at Twitter and that was a mistake and it reset my brain.
Oh no, why'd you do that?
Can't you get off that crap site?
don't fucking go to Twitter, Hunter.
I am so.
It's depressing.
You don't even think about the bird.
Hey, the bird is the word.
You can go on MeWe because there's nothing to read on there anyway. That's okay. You can go on Gab.
That makes me think of Pink Flamingos every time I hear that song.
Dude, I think about the Trashmen a lot. Like, what were their lives like? If somebody made a biopic of the Trashmen, I would watch it just because I'm curious. I want to know what were their lives like? What was the life of the Trashmen like?
Come up with Papa Mau Mau?
Yeah, and the bird is the word. And I watched, I posted on Twitter earlier. They just had the singer on American Bandstand. They didn't have the rest of the band. And he's flapping his arms, like doing the thing where you put your fists on your chest and you flap your wings.
Oh,
he was doing that, and he does the whole song. Bird is the word. Bird, you know, and he's just going on and flapping the wings. And then Dick Clark is interviewing him, and he can't breathe because he's so out of breath.
That's only second to the singing anus in Pink Flamingo doing that.
Yeah. Well, Dick Clark wanted to get the singing anus on, but it's unavailable.
Oh, if only. If only. Oh, God.
Yeah, but we need like a Can't Stop the Music, but for the Trashmen, or a Jersey Boys, but for the Trashmen, you know? I really want that. I think I found my calling.
I actually prefer the Ramones version of that song than the Trashmen's one. I like the Trashmen's, sure. But the Ramones
I like
is
the
much.
Cramps. The Cramps were big Trashmen fans, too.
Oh, the hell you say.
Cramps version might be my favorite, but I love the Ramones version as well. So
the which version, really, John? Which version?
Ramones.
There you go.
Yeah, the I think the Trashmen, they were like this kind of touchstone for punk, you know, because a lot of punk bands would cover Bird and Surfin' Bird or talk about that as some kind of influence.
Well, punk was taken from a lot of bubblegum records and stuff like the Trashmen, like the surf rock hits and that sort of thing, like weird tunes like that.
So it's just such a weird song. And, you know, you listen to it, you go, who came up with this? Like, what? Where did this come from? But anyway.
They were looking for gimmicks. Lou Reed wrote some cheap knockoff when he was just a songwriter. So they call it, like, the ostrich, like, do the ostrich. They're just coming up with phrases to apply to dances.
Come up with dances. Yeah, it's actually, we've kind of come back around because now it's like, do the Harlem Shake, Gangnam Style, you know.
Yeah, K-pop is taking over.
See a Dougie.
Actually found something. I just found out something the other day, which I had no idea was that really dumb song. Hang on, Sloopy by the McCoys. I had no idea it was Rick Derringer in there.
Oh, wow, yeah. He was probably just a studio gun, right? Hired gun.
No, that was his band.
That was his original. Jeez.
Yeah. I had no idea.
Wow. I found out one of the guys in Lynyrd Skynyrd was in the Strawberry Alarm Clock and played on Incense and Peppermint.
Oh, shit. I listened to that first album of theirs. I think it's called Incense and Peppermints. It may have been retitled, but I don't know what the original title was. That was a damn good album, actually. Even with that song, the rest of the album was actually very good.
Yeah, there was there was a member who was later in Skynyrd. It's kind of like Blackie Lawless being in the New York Dolls and the incarnation nobody heard or remembers. Their final incarnation where they were like based out of a trailer park or something.
I actually, that's really weird because just the other day I had no clue who they were, but then I heard that song and I went, oh, that I've heard this song before.
It was in
Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was. Yeah, it was. I think it was even in the first Austin Powers film. I think.
Yes, it was. Yes. You're right. It was. It totally was.
Yeah. Anyway, boys, I've just seen something here. Don't know if you know already, the new James Bond film, No Time to Die. 2 hours, 54 minutes long.
Give
me a break! What?
Oh, that series is dead. They killed the series.
That's ridiculous.
Why? Oh my gosh, Spectre was so long. I went to see it with one of my friends, and he was like, I've seen it already, but I'll go see it with you. And he slept through the whole thing. He was like, he just passed out. And I went, this movie, I was like, yeah, I wouldn't want to see this
Spectre
again.
Spectre is so bad.
He uses an opportunity just to take a nap. He watched the opening action scene, which was pretty good, and then he just conked out.
You know what? People shit on A View to a Kill as a bad Bond movie. I'll watch that any day over Spectre.
For 100%. 100%.
Yeah, I probably would. I hate A View to a Kill, but I would rather watch that than Spectre again.
I wouldn't say I hate A View to a Kill. I actually do enjoy it. It's not great. I'll grant you that.
I find it tough to watch for me.
It's very tough for me to get through.
You think Walken would be a good Bond villain? Nope.
Nah.
Amuse me, Mr. Bond. Huh?
I'm raised by Nazis.
Nazis, huh?
Yeah, but put two films in front of me, that or Spectre. I'm watching A View to a Kill any day.
Yeah, I'm probably going. I'll do it for the Duran Duran theme.
I'll do it for the boy. Ski
Beach Boys. God, that was total Austin Powers shit years before Austin Powers.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And then Moore looks like so old in all the San Francisco action scenes. He just looks like an old man.
Those San Francisco scenes were nice.
Powers, I watched The Spy with the Green Hat. I mean, mm-hmm. full-blown comedy. You know, I mean, it's already, that stuff was making fun of itself before Austin Powers came along.
Yeah, Man from U.N.C.L.E. was not a serious, straightforward show.
Not at all. Some
hardcore fans will tell you.
The movie was much more serious, the new one.
It played a lot straighter than the show.
And even still, it was still funny. Like, Henry Cavill, like, going up, you know, when Armie Hammer's going to get, he has to not fight back. He's like, take it like a pussy. You know,
there's a lot of. I thought that Armie should have been eating people, like Ilya Kuryakin.
Yeah, Ilya Kuryakin's just devouring.
I must eat your arm. You know. You should have played it more like Bela Lugosi. That would have worked.
Yeah.
Speaking of The Man from U.N.C.L.E., I actually got sent that 8 movies collection on DVD by Nez.
Oh, really?
DVD, yeah.
Very cool. I bought it recently. I think that's actually the best way to watch the series is the movie versions. Because movie edits will have a little more violence and a little more sex than what was in the TV version.
Oh.
I mean, it's by 60s standards, so don't expect anything raunchy.
Oh, no, of course
it's
not.
It's a bit sexier, you know. It's like more like the Bond movies than like the U.N.C.L.E. TV show.
Which one would you recommend out of that set to start with? Which film?
Watch them in order. I think it's the best way to start.
Okay. I'll do that.
Because I think the first movie, if I'm not mistaken, is an edit of the pilot. But there's like hot shots of Yvonne Craig, the future Batgirl.
Hell yeah.
They're not in the TV version, but in the movie, she's like operating the switchboard or whatever in a bikini for no reason at all.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I watched The Spy with the Green Hat and I was like, this movie's pretty horny. Like, you know, Janet Leigh and that Sicilian girl having these like cat fights and stuff.
Yeah, there's a little S&M theme going on there too. That's
big time.
Yeah.
To trap a spy.
Jack Palance is high the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, Spy with Green Hat's good, but I'd watch them in order. I think that's the best way.
To Trap a Spy is the first one. All right.
Yeah.
Well, it's got some cool... it's got Rip Torn, Telly Savalas. Oh, wow.
Yeah, they've got a lot of people in those.
I'm going to start watching those. I mean,
they're really good.
I got them, but they're on the shelf, obviously, and I'm thankful to Anthony to send them, but... Now you've been talking about Man from U.N.C.L.E., I thought, oh, I've got those movies. I should start watching a few.
Yeah, we should do one of them.
We actually should, yeah. We really should do
that. Yeah, they're a lot of fun. They're not Dr. No or, you know, Goldfinger from Rush with Love quality, but they're a lot of fun, yeah.
We should do The Trap a Spy, the first one. If you guys got that? You got that one,
yeah,
Connor?
Definitely.
I can get it.
All right. Cool. All right, we'll do that one in the... put in the basket of things to do. But you want to rate this film? Because we have deviated away from it, thankfully, for quite a while. Yeah.
So, John, you picked The Hunt. What would you rate it and why?
I give it a 7. Very fast-paced. As movie dweller Walter said, it's a swift genre entertainment. I would agree with that assessment. And I also think it was a lot better than I expected it to be. I didn't expect much. Especially for these people.
Yeah, I'd give it a 7 as well. I initially was going to give it a 6, but talking about it makes me like it a little more.
It's drive-in shit, but it's a blast.
It's the kind
for us Americans tired of all this crap, you know.
Yeah, I give it a little more points for being made specifically for an American audience. Because I think that's rare nowadays.
Domestic exploitation is what it is.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we should be getting a lot more kind of junk like this. And I think we tend to elevate junk like this because we just don't get it that much.
Exactly. Drive, the rest
Drive. Oh, yeah. I remember you saying
that. Perfect example.
Yeah. I remember you saying that when it came out. You were like, really, we're overrating the crap out of this.
Yeah, because we used to get this on a regular basis, and now it's once every 3 years.
Yeah, and I give it a 7 as well. I do, you know, one thing I will say, it's kind of cowardly that it doesn't really, it kind of tries not to take a side, but whatever. But it's a way fun movie. I did not expect to care too much about it one way or the other. I was kind of expecting a middling 5 out of 10, but it surprised me. Give it a 7.
Yeah.
Stuart?
Did not enjoy this film at all. 90 minutes of my time gone.
I always love doing that to you, Stu.
Yes, I know you do.
We'll do Can't Stop the Music just to make you happy.
That's the title of Stu's spinoff show, 90 Minutes Gone.
Yeah.
You just cover movies you hate. It's 90 Minutes Gone.
No, it was actually more than...
I have to rate a 3.
Oh, no, it's not getting a 3. Didn't like the actors, didn't like the story. Waste of my time, and it's the worst film I've seen in the last 10 to 15 years, and it's 0.
0?
0.
Yankee hatred coming.
No, yeah. Nothing to do with being American. Nothing to do with it. It is absolutely the worst fucking movie.
Admit it. You just like Rob Zombie, and that's it. And it's only because he's done
that. Oh, you know, you can laugh, but the fact of the matter is, I actually said to myself after I watched this, I enjoyed 31 more than I enjoyed this. And that's Rob Zombie's worst film.
Come on.
You're just trolling at this point.
I am not.
Oh, my God, Stu.
I'm not trolling. I promise you. And 31's a stinker. It is absolute shit. But at least it had something in there that was remotely as weird as it was. This was just dumb.
Well, Stu, I'm going to organize a search party, and we're going to find what you found in 31. We're going to have some flashlights and some bloodhounds, and we're going to look for this quality you found in that movie.
I was actually going to say, to the people who torrented this movie like I did, there'll probably be a party out there for people who didn't buy it. And in the infamous words of our Lord and Savior Paul Hogan, come and get me. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I was going to say, our FBI guy, you know, has no jurisdiction over still the MMC.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, good luck getting into this country at the moment, so fuck off. You got no hope.
I think Universal wanted this torrented because I still stand by my theory. Exec hated this film and probably leaked it out on his own.
Good.
I think you're onto something.
But yep, it's an absolute big, fat, heavily obese 0 from me. Worst movie in the last 15 years, I reckon. I honestly can't think of something I've seen this bad. Lords of Salem I enjoyed more than this, and that got a 0 for me.
Ooh, nasty.
No.
Come on.
Nope.
Come on.
Nope.
Now you're just being ridiculous.
This is Stu's new act. Suddenly retroactively liking the Rob Zombie movies.
Fuck every actor in this movie, and fuck the guy who made this movie as well. It was shit. Craig Zobel, if you listen.
What about the guy who played the ambassador? Come on.
I don't care.
Come on, he was good. That's a little five minute role.
I don't care.
We like Ethan Suplee, don't we?
No.
Is that Amy Madigan with her 100-year-old face?
L. Ron Hubbard likes Ethan Suplee. I don't. Which is a good segue into saying just one thing. Mike Rinder. For no reason, just saying Mike Rinder.
We haven't
done it for a few weeks, so yeah, Mike Rinder. I was listening to him this morning, actually, him and Leah Remini.
We're going to do a deep dive on the Dianetics eventually.
Yeah.
I wish I could get a hold of the movies L. Ron Hubbard supposedly made in the 70s and shot in their ranch.
I have said for ages, why don't we just bite the bullet and watch Battlefield Earth?
No. Well, you bring Garrow on for that.
Oh, yeah.
Get half a year to edit it, but, you know, because he's going to do some gay jokes about Travolta. And a Obama and God knows what else. But.
Did you know that the word cyclo has got the letter C-O-C in it for cocky?
Gosh, just write the script for Garrow.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, let's go ahead and wrap it up. I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
And that's about it all. Peace out.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.